thank you all for being here. We have an incredible group here, and I'm just going to start with a few elected officials. Madam President is on her way, but I want to mention and thank President Tony Preckwinkle for always being supportive of City Club, and she's on her way here. Congressman Mike Quigley, you made it. Congressman was on the floor of the House, the U.S. House of Representatives, until 3 a.m. today. I don't think he slept, so if he's, you know, slurring a couple words, please give him, he's a public servant who's doing the great work of this state. Thank you, Congressman, for all that you're doing and for being here. I see Alderman Brian Hopkins, Alderman Vasquez, I believe Alderman Red Burnett, Walter Red Burnett, Senator Christine Castro, Mayor Matthew Browley, Deputy Governors Bria Scudder and Martin Torres, Dr. Tom Shanley from Lori Children's, Park District Superintendent Carlos Ramirez Rosa, Mary Richardson Lowry from the city. I saw John Atkinson and possibly Christy George. So there are some great public servants in the room. Oh, of course, our treasurer, Mike Frericks. Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. This list has been constantly in the works. So if you are an elected official or an official of the city or state, please stand, give us a wave. I'll try to recognize you. And thank you. Thank you, Alderman. Thank you, former Alderman. I never want to miss, especially elected officials. Thank you so much. And we're focusing on housing today, as you all know. So we do have a few other experts in the room, and I'll get to our panelists in just a second. But, of course, one of the foremost experts on housing in the state, really, is Mary Kenny. And she's always great and helpful with City Club. Thank you, Mary. She has been working with Reclaiming Chicago and formerly with IDA. Speaking of IDA, you're here. I mentioned you as a sponsor. Kristen Faust is here. There. Thank you, Kristen. Thank you for all of your efforts from the Illinois Housing Development Authority. Andy Stern is here from Pulte Home Builders. We love that they're building in Illinois, right? Keep it up. David Doig has done so much to continue to build in Illinois, and as have all the folks at Clayco. I see Michael Fosnock here. King Harris is here, the chair of IDA. King, thank you for your always support of City Club and the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. You've done so much, King. Thank you. And, of course, as chairing IDA. So many luminaries in this room. I can't do it all. I'm going to take a moment instead of recognizing all the other folks that are here to mention one that's not, who is a very dear friend of so many of ours, Anne-Marie St. Germain. We lost Anne-Marie last week. She was a longtime board member of the City Club and just a dear friend and a dear part of the City Club family. And it's really because of Anne-Marie that this programming has become diversified and these tables look like Chicago and reflect so much of the great things that this city is about. She did so much to bring people together and make so much good happen. Beyond her leadership, her presence, her friendship, thoughtful, steady, deep commitment to this city. So we as City Club and as a city are better because of Anne-Marie. She lost a horrible fight with cancer over many years. But I hope that we can all take her story and her efforts and her commitment and move things forward in her honor. Thank you, Anne-Marie, for all that you did. Tomorrow, her friends, family, and everyone is welcome to a service at St. Gertrude's tomorrow morning to help lay Anne-Marie to rest. So thank you. Thank you for allowing me that moment. And thank you, all of you, for being here on this beautiful day to celebrate all the good and all these incredible people who have done so much good for our city, and that's every one of you. It's so much appreciated, and that you take your time to be here. So we're going to do things a little bit differently today. You notice the stage is set a little bit differently. I just figured it out. The governor is going to ask the questions. And so we're going to see how this goes, guys. I just figured out, though, I realized, so he doesn't have to answer the questions. So I don't know what that means, but what it does mean is that we're going to have you back, sir, for the real, because you're always good with the good, tough questions. Governor, we're excited to have you here today, and it'll be a fun format. And housing, as we talk about so often here at City Club, is such a key issue for the future of this state. And I think we're going to hear a lot about what the plans are moving forward. And so with the governor, he has asked a few folks that are experts to join him. I'm going to mention who they are, and then you'll see them in just a minute. We have the former planning commissioner in Croke Fairchild's David Reifman, Erica Pothig from the Commercial Club of Chicago, the Civic Committee, of course, and then Abundant Housing Illinois' Stephanie Bahaman and Leon Walker, CEO of DL3 Realty Advisors. I'm going to ask them to join our guest of honor up here, who's going to give some remarks, and then, as I said, turn it over to a bit of a conversation. So, as always, we're so honored when we have Governor Pritzker with us. He is a champion for our state, for our city. He's a friend to the City Club. He's a friend to so many of us personally, and he's just a great public servant who is done so much to move this state forward and, of course, on the national stage, make sure everyone understands all the potential and all the good that there is in the state of Illinois. Please join me in welcoming back to the City Club of Chicago, Governor J.B. Pritzker.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's great to see all of you. Thank you so much, Dan. I want to just for a moment say a couple words about City Club and Dan. First, I've known Dan for I don't know how many years now, Dan, but my wife and I both just think the world of Dan, just as an individual. Put aside all the work that he's done to build this great club back. And so whenever he calls, we answer, I answer, and I'm really pleased to be here. And I am proud of what City Club has become once again, and even more so than ever before. And its evidence is the fact that all of you are here today, and I've seen the crowds are terrific, and the forums, the subject matter of the forums has been, great enough so that I'm, you know, secretly, I'm like, by the way, I'm the guy who watches C-SPAN in his free time. So I'm also a guy who watches all of the videos for the City Club programming. So I don't know. I'm a geek, I guess. My apologies for that. But it is really great to be here with all of you, and especially to discuss the urgency frankly, one of the most important issues that's facing our state and our nation, and that's housing. So I don't think it's going to be breaking news to any of you to learn that Illinois needs more housing. Yeah. And every real estate agent, every developer, every tenant, every business owner, anybody on the street will tell you that supply is too low. Interest rates, of course, are still too slow to come down. Prices are too high, and our people in our communities are feeling the pain of all of that. And the data backs them up. The number of home listings in Illinois has dropped 64% over the last several years, and Illinois currently faces a gap of over 142,000 housing units. And we need to build up about 225,000 more units over the next 5 years just to keep up with what we know of the demand. The national housing crisis feels especially acute in our state. Too many people are locked out of the American dream. We have, among us, motivated, qualified buyers, young families looking to build lives in their communities that simply can't find housing at a price that they can afford. even as we now see our population increasing. Sorry, let me repeat that for all of you. Even as we now see our population increasing, the state of our housing market is limiting our ability to grow our economy. To quote William Shakespeare, the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. The problem that we face is a failure to create and build enough homes, due in part to restrictive regulations in local jurisdictions. Often, that's rooted in a history of housing discrimination. That's not to say that people intend to have that be the case today, but it's just rooted in often lines of code that nobody's looked at for far too many years. And it prevents builders from building even small duplexes regulations prevent accessory dwelling units from being offered on the market by their owners. That causes owners not to get the income that they want, that they could get to add to the income that they already have, and also, frankly, to keep family members of theirs from being able to live on their property, perhaps in a coach house, in an apartment above their garage. We have developers in Illinois who are ready to build homes, and Illinoisans who need them, but it just doesn't get done because of these regulations. And it's on us to help fix it. This year, I unveiled the Building Up Illinois Developments, or BUILD, plan. It's an initiative to lower housing costs by making it easier, faster, and more effective to build homes in Illinois. This is one of the most ambitious plans in the entire country. Everybody's dealing with this problem, by the way. It does not matter which governor I talk to or which state you go to. Everybody has this problem. But our plan really is one of the most comprehensive. It's designed to eliminate unnecessary barriers and lower costs for housing construction and renovation, produce a wider range of family-friendly housing types, and to streamline permitting. We're also adding to that a robust approach to closing financing gaps for developing housing of all kinds, from offering targeted funds for small projects to giving direct support to local communities so that they can clear initial hurdles and make housing sites build ready. We can vault ahead of the rest of the country. I want to repeat that because I'm a competitive sort, and I want Illinois to be the best state in the entire nation in every category. And this is one where we really can be the best. We can vault ahead of everybody else in addressing the national housing crisis, and it will put money in the pockets of Illinois families and businesses. This won't require major upheaval or sacrificing the beauty and the culture that makes our communities so special. We're talking about a gentle increase in density, 2 and 3 flat apartments and granny flats, allowing for a few more units all across the state and welcoming a few more families and neighbors into our communities, city by city, town by town, neighbor by neighborhood, block by block. A little more housing in each area of the state can make truly a world of difference. I talked about 225,000 units that are needed. This will cover a whole big bunch of that need. We still need Pulte Homes. We still need a whole bunch of builders to come to the state in areas where we need large developments. But this proposal goes a long way to addressing the challenges that we already have and know that we can do just on our own. It doesn't cost the state anything either, to be clear. We're assisting local governments in investing in underground infrastructure so that they can get sites that are ready or grow their communities, especially with those infrastructure needs. But that's very important to recognize. This isn't about writing a big check from the taxpayers. It is about spurring on private growth of dwellings across the state. Private investors, private sector, not public sector dollars. Illinois' population has increased now for 3 consecutive years, and it's a testament. It's a testament to our progress bringing in new investments and new opportunities, making the state a welcoming state for families across the United States who just want to have their rights protected. And we're honestly, that influx of people is putting further pressure on something we already knew we needed. We have a limited supply in this state, and we need to expand it. This is especially true of communities accommodating major business expansions. You know what those communities are across the state, like Bloomington Normal, where Rivian, in my term as governor, went from about 27 employees to about 8,000 employees. You can imagine what that's done for Normal and for Bloomington. And in Decatur, where ADM is growing, and other businesses that have moved to Decatur. Honestly, I've talked to people who are working at those businesses, and they tell me they can't find any place nearby to live if they've moved from out of state. We want more people coming here. We also want people to be able to live near where their work is. And instead, what we have at Rivian is people driving from 90 miles away every day to get to work because there's no housing available. If we're going to build on the record of growth and prosperity that is making this state the state that is the best in the nation to live, work, and raise a family, we will need more housing. We need it from Chicago to Cairo. We need it in Rockford. We need it in Carbondale and Quincy and beyond. And I'm excited to have the discussion that we're about to have today and really glad to do so alongside a panel of experts that span a wide range of industries, ideologies, and perspectives about the Illinois housing market. And as I've traveled across the state talking about the Build Initiative, I've really been floored about the consensus for the need for more housing. It's everywhere. You talk to everybody. It's even people who may not already support the Build Initiative because they don't know what it is yet. They will tell you, like, we need more. We need more. Now, I hear from business owners, economic development officials who are looking to bring in more jobs and more investment, but worry about where the workforce is going to live. I talk to companies from out of state who want to come to Illinois. They love the fact that we have one of the best education systems in the country. We have the third largest community college system in the country. We have some of the absolute top worldwide institutions of higher learning in this state. And the only thing in some cases that holds up a company coming to the state of Illinois is they don't know where their workers are going to live. So this is something I hear everywhere I go. We need more tools to build more housing. We need more regulatory certainty. I hear it from real estate agents, from developers who see firsthand the red tape that exists in restricting our growth and hurting our working families. And I hear from families directly. First-time home buyers who just want to make progress toward achieving their American dream. So here today to talk about all of that are some of the great experts that we have, not just in the city of Chicago, but from across the state. David Reifman, of course, the former commissioner of Chicago Department of Planning and Development, now at Croke Fairchild Duarte. Stephanie Bahaman, who's at Abundant Housing Illinois. By the way, her members were all over the Capitol the other day wearing that T-shirt that she's wearing. Yes, another one out here. Love that. Legalized housing, if you didn't see it. And it was great because these are young people who the exact folks that we need to address and are addressing with this program. Erica Pothig, who's the executive VP for strategy and planning at the Civic Committee and Commercial Club, and Leon Walker, the CEO of DL3 Realty Advisor. So I'm excited to hear more from them about our path forward. And thank you all for joining us today. I warned them ahead of time that I had a few just easy, fast questions for them, just true-false questions that I wanted them to answer. So it's a quiz. We're going to grade you. You guys are keeping track. We're going to grade them on these. These are the experts. So they're pretty simple, straightforward questions, but one of the best ways to lower housing is to build more housing. Is that true or false? Did they all get it right? I can't see. Housing availability is tied to economic growth and workforce stability. Yep. How about building multi-unit housing lowers nearby property values? False, everybody. Current rules prevent developers from building the amount of housing that the market is currently demanding. And rents are too damn high. Okay. Apparently, Leon's rent is not too high. We all just want to know where you're living. So I appreciate you all playing along. So I want to start with David Riefman. One misperception about doing anything about housing, but in particular this build plan, is the idea that it could dramatically reshape neighborhoods and take away local control. So from your experience, you know what the bill has in it. What actually happens on the ground when you make these kinds of changes? Is change gradual and homeowner-driven, or is it the kind of large-scale redevelopment that everybody worries about for their community? You want a building up of your community of homes and dwellings that are like yours. And so how much do local rules still get to shape what happens in their communities?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me to join you, Governor, and thank you, City Club, for having me back. I'd like to echo and amplify some of the comments you made to answer that question. I think the first point, most important point, is that the housing types that build actually permits are inherently small scale. So we are talking in this act about duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, ADUs. We are not talking about developers overbuilding a neighborhood, putting high-rise or mid-rise development on the end of a cul-de-sac block. That's not really what we're talking about. I also think we're talking about the type of developers that will do these units is very different than what you would see for large-scale development. These are going to be property owners themselves or smaller-scale developers. So I think that's the first important point about what Build does. The second point I would make is local control is overwhelmingly primarily preserved under this act. It's not eliminated. Local governments will maintain control over building, zoning codes, standards for safety, plan approvals, and so forth. So preserving the overall zoning authority, that there's no issue with this. The municipalities will get to pick districts, overall uses, even though it is true that it eliminates some types of hurdles like special use permits in various districts to allow this type of housing to come in. Another element is that I think is another positive is more uniformity in impact fees. It's a hodgepodge of options, and I think this will make it easier for both developers and local governments to effectively implement these things. And what developers want, as you mentioned, Governor, is predictability. That's what will get them to build, finance, and develop. And then the last point I would make is a little bit different, which is there's a need to balance local control with urgent public policy issues. And there's nothing new about that in zoning or zoning legislation, including preemptions of home rule authority, which occurs. In this case, we have an affordable housing crisis in Illinois. And for years, we've seen elected officials at the local level acknowledge the need for more affordable housing. But when it comes time to act, local policy, local politics, neighborhood opposition, those types of issues make it nearly impossible to follow through. Build breaks that cycle. The establishing of statewide standards, and it's like, as the governor said, relatively narrow. The state gives local leaders the framework and, frankly, the political cover to say yes to housing they know their communities need. So in this case, it's not the state overriding local government. It's the state stepping up to stand with local leaders so they don't have to stand alone. So that would be my thoughts.
I'm just going to ask one quick follow-up question, which is, so if someone comes into a suburban neighborhood and wants to develop a 50-condo building, and it's going to be a, I don't know, 10-story building in a neighborhood that's got single-family homes. Is that something that gets authorized by this build plan?
Absolutely not. I can expand, but it's really for smaller scale lots. It's really up to about 8 units. These are small. They're not very small, but they're smaller scale developments that will fit in the context of single family and lower density neighborhoods. This is not overwhelming them with high rises, mid rises, condo buildings like you described. That won't happen.
Thank you. And by the way, the plan was put together with the input of homeowners in neighborhoods and suburban neighborhoods and cities, as well as with experts that you know live and breathe development. But very importantly, with people who are just trying to, you know, expand what they're doing, usually themselves. It's like you've got an accessory dwelling unit. You just want to rent it out and you go to your city council and everybody opposes it, or there's some regulation that actually prevents it from happening. And this is just like, you know, multi-generational housing is pretty common these days, and we need a whole lot more of it, frankly, and we've got to make sure it's easy to approve. So I'm going to move on to Stephanie. And Stephanie, you know, it's never been more difficult for people to achieve the American dream than it is right now. People your age, I'm not going to assume what your age is or ask, but I'll just say people in their 20s and 30s spend large percentages of their income towards what is sky-high rent every month, and then also can't afford to buy a home, which allows them to save some of that money. So it's true for both middle-income people as well as historically marginalized communities. You've read the plan. You also, I will say, have had a plan for some time. It isn't like this organization just popped up from nowhere. And so I guess I really want everybody to hear how you believe this plan will help to level the playing field and provide opportunity, and the kind of character of the people that you represent, the folks that I saw walking around the Capitol just yesterday or the day before. Was it day before yesterday? Time is a flat circle, everybody, at least for me. But anyway, they're just terrific, the energy and enthusiasm. So, yeah, can you give us just like your perspective and your organization's perspective?
Of course. First of all, thank you for having me on this panel. Second of all, thank you for not assuming my age. I still get carded, though, so don't worry about that.
That's a positive thing.
Let me start by talking a little bit about my own personal history. I actually live... well, not as of yesterday, but I lived in a two-flat that I bought with my older brother and his now wife. It took us 5 degrees to be able to buy that. I have a bachelor's. They both have master's. And it is a house that was built when the Ottoman Empire still existed. So some issues there, but it's housing. It's housing for us. He lives downstairs. I live upstairs. Up until the end of April, where my mom is moving in up top. So you talked about multi-generational housing. I have that in my own history. And it's something that I know is very important to a lot of people everywhere, but specifically Latino families like myself, I'm Colombian American, and Black families as well. Something that I like to note about that too is that I think oftentimes when people think about Black or Latino families, they think of them in Chicago. But the reality of the matter is that most Black people and most Latino people in Illinois do not live in Chicago. And the housing problem does not end at Howard. It does not end at Harlem. It does not end at 138th. It continues on beyond the boundaries of this. And the build plan really does what I like to think of as skating to where the puck is, or if you're a soccer fan like I am, running to where space is, and tries to get to where the problem is, which is outside of Chicago, across the entire state. One more thing I'd like to note as well about local control is that, like you said, and like David pointed out, a lot of these municipalities will be pointing out and talking about the fact that, oh, you know, there's affordable housing, we're trying really hard to get affordable housing, but you should all leave that to us, right? We're going to deal with it. In computer science, I work in cybersecurity and AI, there's a saying, which is the purpose of the system is what it does. A lot of these municipalities have not taken it seriously. And you can see in the fact that in some of these municipalities, if you're a school teacher, if you're a cop, it's going to take you 20 years just to save enough to put down a down payment. So why don't we make it easier for those families who are already there and want to expand their family there by letting them put a coach house in the back or letting them put a basement unit in the bottom? I'm very fond of basement units in particular because my brother met his wife in one, and he was lucky enough to be able to do that, and their dog. But we should expand that out and expand that opportunity out to everyone who lives in the state of Illinois.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. And I guess I'll ask one quick follow-up, which is we have so many people and situations where it's hard to put together. I want to just define for everybody. We often talk about affordable housing, and people have different understanding of what that means. I think some people think because the word affordable housing, the words affordable housing are used often to describe programs that are meant for low-income families, that when we're talking about affordable housing, and you're talking about it for young people your age, as young as you are, without knowing what that age is, but we're talking now about middle housing that is unaffordable, and we need to make affordable. So that's we're talking about all of it. You know, we need more for sure. But I just want to be clear that this is not a conversation only about federal housing programs for people who otherwise could not possibly afford a home, but rather all of it, including especially people who make $75,000 to $225,000 and can't buy a home. It used to be you could buy a home, and the average price of a home in Illinois is $290,000 across the state, and about $360,000 in the city of Chicago. $360,000 for an average price of a home. You're finding, are you not, that like even the $290,000 or $360,000 you talk about, so many people living outside the city. People just can't, you know, even with a good job like one you have, they just can't get there. And we're providing programs. Kristen Faust is here from IDA. We're providing programs that are helping people with a down payment. But, you know, you can't find a home. And if there aren't enough homes, the price of them is going up just because of the competition. I mean, they're coming off the market very fast and at prices that are just too high. So can you just, validate for me, or at least tell me if you think I'm wrong, that, we're it's crazy. It seems to me like people are making $150,000, $200,000, $225,000, can't buy a home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really, it's not quite just basic supply and demand. There's some nuance to it. But at the heart of it, that is part of what happens, where if there's not enough housing, or as we've seen on the north side, on the south and west sides, these 2, 3, 4 flats are getting knocked down and they can't be built again because it's not permitted for them to be built there, you end up having a housing crunch, which we're suffering from right now.
Thank you. And Erica, who represents some of the biggest businesses in the state of Illinois, part of the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club, building housing is good for the economy. You know that, and it's critical to a thriving workforce. So can you talk about why housing shortages constrain economic development when you talk to the businesses that you work with in the Civic Committee? You know, why is addressing our housing supply, the kinds of housing that we're talking about, good for their businesses and, of course, for their employees?
Gladly. And thank you, Governor, for inviting me to be here. But I also sit on IDA's board, so I know the excellent work. I know that IDA is first in class around the country, and we had a board meeting this morning. We allocate the capital to the rental housing that is affordable to lower income households, as well as mortgage programs like Smart Buy, which I know is part of the build plan. So it's critically important, but we're not going to close this gap that you talked about with tax credits and mortgages alone. This is more than social policy. This is really a fundamental economic bottleneck that we find ourselves in. So the cost of failing to build enough housing is a major drag on our prosperity. And we know this because Harvard economist Ed Glaser did a study, and he found and measured that regulatory barriers in housing cost the U.S. economy $400 billion annually. $400 billion annually. And that was a few years ago. I'm quite sure it's even more today. And that's because talent that wants to move into the most productive regions in the country can't afford to do that. And talent that's in those regions may have to leave because they can't afford to live there anymore. So we're leaving growth on the table for the U.S. and for regions in the state of Illinois, too. And Governor, you've positioned Illinois to lead on quantum. And we know from another economist, Enrico Moretti, that for every one these tech jobs that gets created, 5 other jobs comes along with that, whether it's the lab technician or the plumber or the doctor that's a service to the new people living here, every new tech job, 5 additional jobs get added. But then the question is, where are those people going to live? And you said that in your introductory remark. If a company can't house its workforce, that company won't be able to expand here, and new companies will not be able to come here. And that's the definition of an economic bottleneck. But we also need to be clear on why we need to grow. And that is also related to our fiscal health. Growth is our revenue engine. We have world-class infrastructure in the state of Illinois, and that's been built over decades. But we also have other obligations, and we need a population base and size, and we've been growing, as you noted, to be able to do that without placing undue burdens on individual taxpayers. So housing is a primary input into that equation. When families can't find starter homes, like that small single family home or that condo or the two flat and living that you share with a family member, they can't afford to stay here, and they certainly other families can't afford to move here. And that means they don't pay taxes here, and they have the ability to reinvest back into the quality of life that we all enjoy. So the business logic is really simple. In today's economy, capital follows talent and talent follows housing. While Illinois remains right now relatively more affordable than the coasts, Silicon Valley, New York, that affordability advantage is a closing window, and we need to both preserve our affordability that we have so we don't lose that competitive edge, but we also need a housing ladder that has a diversity of choices, the kind of gentle diversity that you talked about. 2 flats, 4 flats, apartments, certainly townhomes, single family houses that allows a lab technician to live in the same region as the quantum physicist that they support. So our housing supply is also a signal of our brand as a state. And you mentioned this, Governor. We are a welcoming state, and we want to put out that we're open for business, that we're open for many people to live here. But when we don't have enough housing supply, that's a keep out sign. So we need to turn that around. We need to have an open for business sign and an invitation and signal that Illinois is a state that welcomes families and has the room to accommodate our future.
My follow-up is just that I could, because you talked to some of the biggest business leaders in the state, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, that some of them are, when they're expanding, they're considering a lot of things about where they're going to expand to. These are large companies that can go anywhere in the country. They might be Chicago based, but they can do open a new plant anywhere. Have a additional headquarters somewhere. Yep. So I guess my question is, when you hear about their challenges, mm-hmm. I mean, is housing coming up in those conversations as they think about expanding?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I can think about some of the businesses in Bloomington that you mentioned. Everybody's very excited to have Rivian, but that also means that Bloomington's housing challenge has gotten harder for the other businesses that are in Bloomington today. So that's one example. But in Chicago region, again, we are, you know, when they're trying to recruit people from the coast, we're relatively more affordable. And that is an advantage. That is an advantage that we have, but it's an advantage that people are seeing increasingly diminished. And we have to act today. The problem with Seattle, the Bay Area, Boston, they didn't get ahead of it. And now they're seeing businesses leave as a consequence. And I also hear that when I go to DC and talk to the other state business roundtables, they will say, and it's Boston, it's California, it's Washington. Housing is the absolute number one issue on their list because they're losing businesses as a consequence. So for us, it's both this, it's this comparative advantage we have today that we have to secure our future, and we have to start now, and build it.
And you said something I'll just follow up about. You talked about the $400 billion that the country misses out on by having bad housing policy, and the need for more housing as a result. But just so everybody has it in mind, when people talk about the impact of something on the entire nation, we are more than 4% of the economy of the entire country. So in $400 billion a year of lost opportunity is more than $16 billion a year of our lost opportunity. We continue to be, and we're the fifth largest economy in the country. And, you know, as goes Illinois, so goes the nation. If we can figure this out better than, frankly, the other four of the top five economies in the country, I really think, I mean, what an impact it'll have on our future.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I, before moving back home, I was in DC. So I spend a lot of time talking to people who are watching this around the country. And they are so excited by this, build initiative, because you, as you said, it is leading edge, and it's leading edge at a time where we see a lot of other states deeply battling these issues. But if we can advance this strategy, it just does put us at the top.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Erica. And I want to ask Leon a question. The, you know, I just want to quickly point out, most of the build plan does not cost the taxpayers of the state anything. We could solve this problem with a private sector, mostly, almost entirely private sector solution if government would just roll back, get a little bit out of the way. And I know there are people sitting in the audience thinking, but he's a Democrat. I'm a businessman, too. Or I was anyway. But there is a part of the plan where we are making an investment. And this is important. So, you know, in addition to the regulatory reform that we've been talking about, the build plan also includes about $250 million to help spur development of housing where and help people to afford housing. And that has, I hope, a beneficial impact. And we're going to talk to a developer here about that, because you're a developer. You know, how important is it that there's a combination of policy reform along with public investment to just turn the crank on getting housing built? And can you talk about a combined approach, unlocking, or how you feel about a combined approach unlocking private capital to make projects viable, but also adding just a little bit on top of it of public dollars that will advance the cause for a developer to just get over the hump? Sometimes the difference between getting a project going and a project dying is something very small, and we're trying here to sort of jump over those barriers. So talk about the barriers that you see and what this will help you do.
Well, thank you, Governor. And thank you, City Club, for having me back to talk about affordable housing. I must say at the onset here that I'm really impressed that you are inviting a developer to this discussion. It really shows your commitment to the issue and getting this over the finish line. Developers aren't often considered champions of inclusive and equitable policies, but as an impact investor and a developer, we have a different perspective, and we believe that we are stronger together. So I'm pleased to be working with you to advance this initiative and to increase housing options and affordability in our state. I think the appropriate place for us to start, though, on this question about how the economic incentives can spur additional investment, is that we have to understand that we are not experiencing an overbuilding problem. We have an underproduction problem. So once you understand that framing, you can then go back and say to others that are concerned about neighborhoods being changed dramatically, reshaping them, that doesn't really match up with the realities on the ground. In places like Chicago and many places across the state, with large amounts of vacant land, and sometimes are experiencing historic disinvestment along with that vacant land that are plaguing those communities. We're not talking about reinventing neighborhoods. We're talking about encouraging the building of more of the same type of housing that built Chicago. Two flats, three flats, small multi-unit buildings, all of which can fit neatly into the existing fabric of communities. So as I think about this, I want to just say, you know, zoning, which has been a large part of this conversation and is an important part of the consideration for any new development. But it's not the only thing. But in high opportunity areas, wealthy areas, more mature communities, zoning actually is constraining housing production. However, at the same time, if we're really being honest about this issue and more holistic, zoning is one of several issues that we have to address, because even when you have the right zoning, projects still have to pencil and they have to balance in order to move forward. So zoning doesn't build housing. Capital builds housing. Developers have to have patient capital on this point. And to my wife and some of the leadership of DO3 we have in the room here, we also have to have an unusually high tolerance for risk. And that's because we have to take things from concept to key. And that can take, even with a small-scale development that we're talking about here, 2 or 3 years. And all of that capital you're investing up front, that time you're taking to do this, can be totally at risk. Also, today, in this environment with rising construction costs and capital being more expensive, affordable housing in particular, especially workforce and mixed-income housing, there's a real gap between the cost to build and what the market can support. So we have to begin to address that gap. That's why the financial components of the build program and initiative are so important. $250 million in new funding, whether it's for missing middle housing, infrastructure, or homeowner support, can be catalytic. By closing the feasibility gap, de-risking projects, and ultimately bringing private capital off of the sidelines. And that's the key. Public investment doesn't replace private capital, but it sure can activate it. In Chicago and across Illinois, large institutional investors really own less than 10% of the apartment stock. The vast majority is still owned by small and mid-sized operators, local folks, people that you know in your families and in your community. And when you look at the kind of housing, Chicago was built on the 2 flats, the 3 flats we've been talking about, that's almost entirely local ownership. So the challenge isn't who owns housing, it's that we're not producing enough of it. And I can speak directly to that through our work. At DL3, we're 25 years last year in doing this impact investing in our neighborhoods. We've created over 5,000 jobs. But just in the last 5 years, we have invested in 3 affordable housing projects that were LIHTC financed at transit-oriented intersections on the south side of Chicago that have not seen new housing in their community in over 40 or 50 years. How do you expect those communities to be vital and compete? And it's not a lack of investment, but it's, you know, generations, decades of disinvestment. And now we're seeing the same need at a different scale in our downtown loop, where we're currently developing nearly 700 units, including 300 units on South State Street with a CODA Chicago, and another 394 units at the historic field building, 135 South LaSalle, with a joint venture, Adaptive Reuse. So whether it's the south side of Chicago or downtown, the story is the same. We need more housing across a range of types and price points. And there's even a larger point I want all of us to consider today. Housing is not just about shelter. It's a major economic engine that drives our economy. Roughly a quarter of the U.S. economy is tied to housing, particularly when you get beyond just the bricks and mortar of the construction part of it, and you start to consider professional services, insurance, furniture, appliances, everything that comes with living in a home. So when you have neighborhoods with large amounts of vacant land And those communities, you know, are being disconnected from the major part of our economy. They're not fully participating. So how can we expect them to grow, let alone compete for retail and corporate investment? So it's not just a housing gap that we are discussing here today. It's an economic participation gap. And that's where I think the real opportunity is, and what I'm passionate about, you know, addressing, reducing, and alleviating. And if we can reduce the barriers and empower local developers and contractors to invest in their own communities and neighborhoods, particularly with tools like Build, we can start to create a virtuous cycle and get away from the vicious cycle that is limiting our collective prosperity and quality of life. More housing equals more residents, equals more local economic activity, which results in more investment and ultimately jobs. At the end of the day, if the capital stack doesn't work, if the costs and the expenses don't balance with the sources and the income, then the housing doesn't get built. But when it does work, housing becomes the foundation for broader neighborhood recovery that benefits all of us. Growing the population in our state, as we've talked about, Governor, we still are on track 3 years in a row, and our city getting back over 3 million residents is critical to our long-term financial viability. This is an urgent issue, and I'm, you know, happy to be here in support of you moving this forward and taking the leadership on this very important issue.
Thank you very much, Leon. And I want to conclude by just saying to all of you, this is a problem that we have to solve. We don't have any choice. The future of the city, the future of the state depends upon us expanding the housing supply. It really does. We are in the process now of turning the crank faster and faster on economic growth for the state. We started out when I took office at about half, a little less than half of the growth rate of the entire United States in the state of Illinois. As we turn the crank on this, we now have more jobs than ever before in the state. We're attracting businesses to Illinois, but it becomes harder and harder to do that in an environment where we need to speed up this economic growth of our state. It becomes harder and harder if we don't have the housing that's available for people to do it. So I just want to say to all of you, when you run into people who are maybe opposed to this, or you get into a discussion with them, ask them, what are we going to do then? If it's not remove a few barriers, if it's not helping build a little bit of housing everywhere in the state in a gentle way, and not some massive pushed way that's interfering with people's lives and neighborhoods. What is the alternative? Because there really isn't a good alternative to this. We have a lot of other things we need to do to grow the state of Illinois. But if we do not add housing, we're going to get stopped in our tracks. And so I really appreciate all of the panelists sharing their thoughts, and I appreciate all of you listening, and thank you, and go forth, and let's get this build plan passed.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Governor Pritzker. Thank you to our panel. You're all welcome back soon. Enjoy this beautiful weather. Have a great day.